Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Oh, it's going to be a delicious happy hour, but you know what'll make it more perfect? Little something, something, something from OmahaSteaks.com.
What?
Yum.
Home. Yeah. It's not just my favorite restaurant. It's my only restaurant in COVID lockdown. And you got to, I'm telling you, at Omaha Steaks, I get my fish, my seafood, you name it. Omaha Steaks, it's the aging process. Like me, Chris. Mm-hmm. They just get better and better and better.
If you say so.
Yes. OmahaSteaks.com. Butcher's best sellers package. You want me to tell you what you get? You type voices in that search bar, you save over 50% and you secure exclusive pricing. You get four iconic fork tender butcher's cut filet mignons, four burgers, four savory pork chops, four kielbasas, four caramel apple tartlets, and then they throw in four premium chicken breasts and four more burgers for free.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry. I'm screaming and spitting. It's just okay. My mouth waters when I talk about OmahaSteaks.com. Yeah. Type voices in that search bar. Get that Butcher's Bestsellers package. 50% off. It lies safely at your door. OMG. The company has been bringing together people for over 100 years. That not the same people necessarily. OmahaSteaks.com. Right. Type voices in the search bar. And now on with the show. Oh God, happy, happy hour. Ooh. Drink up, man. I'm getting vaccinated this week, and what's that, Chris? It's me drinking salty MAGA tears. It's Gatesgate. It's Gates.
Yes.
Gates underwater gate, or whatever you want to call it. Oh God, Matt Gaetz is just so good. Oh God. Oh, I'm lapping up the scandal and the just awfulness and the implosion of the entire Republican Party. Oh God, it's awesome. So good.
Yay.
We got to, Barb McQuaid is our adult supervision for the Gaetz scandal, you know, because I suppose you shouldn't really talk about what's legal or not.
Right.
Silly me. I just automatically assumed, you know, having sex with underage prostitutes and paying them for drugs and stuff might be illegal. So we'll find out. Oh, no.
Yes.
Okay. And then lots of good vaccine news this week. Dr. Doom. I mean, it's hard for him to be doomy, although we do have to, right? Just put your fucking mask on and put your... He called Laura Ingraham an idiot, which was... That was like a Molly.
Yeah,
that was like me
that.
Taking a Molly. That was fantastic.
Yeah. What?
Well, because Fox is
like
cock blocking us. We're almost to the end, for God's sakes. We're almost to the end. Wear
so
your
close.
Mask. Don't open yet. Get vaccinated. Just fucking stick it in. Just tell them to
stick it in.
Ah, for God's sakes. It's yes. So Dr. Doom will tell us we are right. We got to do this together, but it is really good news on right. CDC just said it's okay to travel if you're fully vaccinated. So I would urge caution. I would say don't yet. Just wait a few more weeks. We're almost there for fuck's sake.
Wait until there's no longer a surge. Wait until everybody's going down.
Right.
Please.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
You're not trying to dirty.
You're going down.
We can all go down. Maybe you can wait till it goes down. Okay. Sorry. I'm sorry. What did Dana Goldberg say this week? Matt Gaetz is the Eric Trump of Jeffrey Epstein's.
Yeah.
How fucking dumb do you have to be to pay an underage prostitute with fucking Apple Pay, you moron?
I'm Eric.
I'm Matt. How can anybody with that big a forehead not be a moron? It looks like he has an anvil in it with a Bob's Big Boy wig on top.
Yes. Oh, God.
Oh God. All right. So it's a fantastic happy hour. Enjoy Dr. Doom and Legal Lady Barb McQuaid. Get it. Get your face up in it. Okay. Dr. Doom being doomy on Twitter as he does. We are not out of the woods. We may be facing a dangerous new phase. Get vaccine now. Avoid internet and social media BS. Keep up the mass distancing, et cetera. Please trust me and pass this on. Pass it on. And I will take your questions. Well, it's time for my telehealth visit before my vaccine today.
If I'm going to get bad news, I want it from him because he's very handsome. Dr. Irwin Redletter joins us now. Dr. Doom. MSNBC medical expert. He's leading us through the gloom. Dr. Irwin Redler. And now
he enters. Here he became Dr. Doom.
Dr. Irwin Redlener is the founding director of the National Center for Disaster Preparedness and senior research scholar.
Dr. Doom. Oh,
the longest jingle ever. So many credits. Hi, good morning, Dr. Doom.
Good morning, Stephanie and crew. How are you all?
It's vaccine day. Mama's getting her first shot today. It's very exciting.
It is very exciting.
Yeah, I think and you said you're Team Moderna. I'm flashing my gang sign. Chris is Pfizer. I think I'm getting Moderna, but you got Pfizer. Moderna?
I got Moderna, and my wife got Pfizer.
Oh, so you have vaccine rap wars in your own house. Yeah.
We do. Believe me, it's like, Mary Matlin and James Cargill. It's like, we're struggling through this. But actually, really, listen, people should get whatever they can get as soon as they can get it. That's the guiding principle here. Yeah.
Let me ask a couple questions, because actually there's been, seems like, some really good news lately, right, from various studies. I mean, Fauci yesterday saying vaccines are offering protections against the new variants. And the other study that came out talking about people like Chris and I that have had it, our T cells are also protecting against variants. So that's really hugely good news, isn't it?
Yeah, it's usually good news. It is. And we're just hoping that we don't get other variants. I don't mean to be doomy here, but the fact of the matter is that the longer this goes on, the more possibilities there are for new virus modifications or mutations. And that's something we want to stay ahead of. And that's really what the race is that people keep talking about. Will the vaccines be able to keep up with any new variants that come along? And so far, so good.
Well, but
like I said, we're not out of the woods.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's why we'll get into all that. Exactly the wrong time to reopen. But explain this to us, because this isn't about antibodies that we've heard about. It's about T cell response, right? Fauci said there's two mechanisms protecting against variants,
correct,
a high tier of
correct
antibody and a T cell response. He cited a paper just published showed that individuals who have been vaccinated have a T cell memory response against variants, not just against the virus they've been vaccinated against. Skip to a critical component known as T cells that people that have already had it, the T cell response to COVID in individuals infected with the initial viral variants appears to fully recognize the major new variants identified in the UK, South Africa, and Brazil. So I'm going to have superpowers after I have having COVID, my T cells, and then my new ones from today's vaccine, correct?
Correct. You're going to be fully armed. And in some ways, better than people that never had the disease, and that is.
So your point is, I'm better than everyone else already. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh my God! Oh no! Don't tell her.
You know, I shouldn't have said that, Chris. Why did I say that? It's just like, it's going to be impossible for you guys the next couple of days now.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring in a golden lasso and all right. Doc, one quick question, because you know, for those of us that have had it and are going to get vaccinated, whether it's today or soon. So, because I know everybody's different in terms of reactions, but I had heard, because you hear this stuff anecdotally, that's why I always want to ask you, that they're saying people that have had it could have a stronger, more side effects. I mean, not, horrible, but they were saying that if the stronger your immune system is, or if you've had it, you could have worse side effects, which is not necessarily something to worry about. But what's your take on that?
Yeah, so the side effects that people are talking about are the kind of reactions to the vaccine injection that include arm soreness that could go on, some fatigue, just feeling lousy. Your own Chris had some symptoms related to back and neck pain. But the point here is that those symptoms go away. They're not serious. Yeah. They're not to be worried about. They're just to be tolerated for 24 hours or so. And And I think that, you know, all the information is not in yet, but the fact is that there are all kinds of interesting twists to getting the shot if you've already had the disease. Most people have no particularly different response, but some people do have what you're talking about. And whatever, I just don't think it's anything to worry about.
So actually, then I heard some people that have, of course, but I've heard some people that have had it actually have a worse response to the first shot.
I don't know. I did not hear that.
Okay. Everybody's different. Yeah. And you really can't predict if you're going to have a reaction or not.
Just get it. Do it. Stick it in. Okay.
Get it. Stick it in.
How about stick it in? She's our vaccine ambassador, Margaret Cho.
Stick it in.
Just stick it in.
I can't comment.
Okay, yeah. Doctor, don't comment on that. It's a clinical thing. This must just warm your heart to have an administration that listens to facts and science and adjusts. The White House coronavirus team reiterated they are now accelerating the nation's vaccine drive. Are now expecting 90% of American adults will be eligible by April 19th, ahead of an earlier target of May. Andy Slavitt said we're facing an accelerating threat. We've accelerated the response even more. Because, you know, what is your take, Doc? Are we in a fourth surge, right? We tallied over 63,000 new cases daily over the past week. Only 5 states have seen declines in new infections. I saw it's up to 30 states have seen increases now. We could be in the early stages of a fourth wave with coronavirus increasing. It was 25 states. Now I heard yesterday up to 30 states.
Yeah.
What is your take,
Doc? Well, unfortunately, I think we're going to see a significant surge of number of cases. May not be getting back to the level of fatalities that we had when they were peaking at 4,200 or so per day. We're now down to 1,000, 1,500 per day. Maybe it'll go up to 1,800, 2,000, which is a horrible thing if you think about it. Yes, it's better than it was, but that many fatalities in a single day is still something to be concerned about. But here's what I think is happening. So as we have relaxation by states like Texas, Mississippi, Alabama, of the guidelines for wearing masks and so on, and Texas has gone even a step further, which I'll mention in a second. But when you have that and you have fraternity parties, you have spring break, we're setting ourselves up for a new and potentially very rough surge. Unfortunately, I think this is, far from over, and this is why we have to stay vigilant. But what I was saying about Texas, if I might, so, baseball season is upon us, and Texas has decided that, unlike all of the other states and baseball teams, they were going to allow full occupancy of the stadium for the Texas Rangers, which is really crazy. It's the governmental equivalent of spring break. It's like, it's reckless. It's stupid. Yeah. And I think there's going to be consequences that the governor of Texas is going to have to answer for in some way or another. But distressing.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the president was asked about this yesterday on ESPN, and he just said, I think it's a mistake. They should listen to Dr. Fauci and the scientists and the experts. Mm-hmm. I think it is not responsible. He noted how many countries in Europe have had to return to lockdowns after premature reopenings. He said, I don't know why we don't just follow the science. I mean, Doc, it couldn't be clearer to me that it is too soon for restaurants, bars, gyms, sporting goods, sporting stadiums, traveling. I mean, and we're so close, as Dr. Walensky said. Crying is not normal for the head of the CDC, right? Saying I'm scared and I feel an impending sense of doom. First of all, I'm like, she's stealing Dr. Doom's act. She literally said doom.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is, you were quoted in this thing about New York, about why is it surging in New York? And you said, you made some good points. No one knows exactly why. There's a lot of factors in New York, population density, lots of people who are in marginalized populations or living in poverty. All those factors tends to exacerbate spread and reduce access to vaccines. But so coronavirus cases rose 64% in New York last week.
Yeah, it's crazy. And there may be some variants that we don't know about. I mean, we're not doing a great job of figuring out when we have variants. Well, that's called the genomic surveillance.
I just was going to quote you. Right. The esteemed epidemiologist, Dr. Redlener, says.
Who's not an epidemiologist, but go ahead. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
There could be but variants that you haven't identified yet in New York is what you're saying, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we just don't know enough about what's floating around out there in terms of where the virus development and the virus mutation. So Yeah, it's still a mystery. We will unravel it, I also said, and but just we have not done that yet. And look, we're just in this, like we were saying before, Stephanie, we are on the cusp of another major outbreak or surge. And that's something we do have to worry about. It's really, really concerning, which is why Dr. Walensky at the CDC is pleading with people to stay the course. Don't give up. Yeah. Keep going. We're not back to normal.
Well, and somebody, you know, some of it is just the stuff that you and everybody, every other expert keeps warning about in terms of New York. More New York residents are interacting inside buildings, given increased access to indoor dining and group fitness classes. It's just too soon. So some of the stuff, and like you say, in New York, everybody's packed together so much more anyway. But I mean, so here's what must just make you insane, because I know it makes me insane. But the headline is Laura Ingraham calls warnings of COVID surge a disinformation campaign. I mean, Fox is doing their level best to kill everybody. I mean, she furthered Fox's unfounded attacks on Dr. Fauci, the CDC and other health experts dismissing their warnings about a COVID surge. She said that the experts' disinformation campaign is ongoing about COVID, even after vaccines. The variants are coming, the mutations, gloom and doom. I mean, why?
Yeah, so, I could be so bold, you know, Laura Ingraham is an idiot. And her prompt, I'm sorry, I hope I didn't.
Is that a clinical diagnosis? Audience. Yes. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, that's a clinical diagnosis. And what's the problem with it is not that she's saying stupid things that are ignorant and unprovable and inaccurate. The problem is that she's exacerbating and concretizing people's feelings of resistance about getting the vaccine. She's creating loss of confidence in these very important recommendations. The problem here is that if she undermines the message enough and gets people to sustain their disbelief of government officials and they don't get their vaccines, we won't get the herd immunity. And if we don't get the herd immunity, which is, you know, at least 80% of the population getting vaccinated, that means we'll be continuously susceptible to surge after surge. So she's dangerous.
Yes.
She's dangerous, like Governor Abbott in Texas. There's people that are just making it worse and making our future more uncertain about all this.
And meanwhile, she's going against her own company, because in order to walk into the Fox News studios and offices, you need to wear a mask, you need to be tested, you need to show a negative test within the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, they're hypocrites. Well, listen, let's get to the good news real quick. We never have you long enough. The Biden administration unveiling a coalition of community, religious and celebrity partners to promote COVID shots as it seeks to overcome vaccine hesitancy. It's the We Can Do This campaign. I love it. Television, social media ads are also relies on community cores of public health, athletic, faith and other groups to spread the word about the safety and efficacy of vaccines.
Yeah.
Because this is the good news, Doc, and I'm sure you've seen this, is vaccine hesitancy is dropping. So despite the Fox Newses of the world, the numbers of Americans who say they won't or are reluctant to get vaccinated continues to shrink. 61% of U.S. adults said they've either gotten their first dose already or are eager to get the shot, up from 47% in January. And as you said, we need 70% to 90% to get, you know, to herd immunity. There was an especially sharp rise. This is great news in the percentage of Black Americans who said they will get vaccinated. It's now at 55%. Overall, 20% of respondents said they won't get vaccinated at all, or only if required by work or school. And again, you know, in Republicans and white evangelical Christians, still overrepresented in the group, another 46% of Republicans said they have or will get vaccinated versus 79% of Democrats. But I love that the Biden administration is targeting that, okay, people trust more their local, you know, pharmacist, doctor, whatever, and they're most likely to be swayed by local community and medical encouragement to get vaccinated rather than messages from politicians. And I love that they're reacting to that and they're surging vaccines in that way, right?
Yes, it's absolutely fantastic. The caveat here is that I think we will make tremendous progress in those communities, the underrepresented minorities, communities in low-income areas, and that is all good. And the Biden administration strategy here is unbelievable. It is the dream strategy that we were hoping for back in the Trump days. Of course, we never would have gotten that, but now we have it. It's fantastic. What I'm more worried about are the people that are listening to Laura Ingraham and others like her and are looking at those kind of messages, like from Laura Ingraham, that they're seeing on social media. And it depends on how many people are going to be falling into line with her way of thinking. And that's what really represents the threat of not getting too herd. But the other issue, which I want to just quickly mention, Stephanie, is that in order to get herd immunity, we also have to have children vaccinated.
Yes.
And we have, you know, Pfizer just released a report that they had very effective, very great results.
Yes.
Of,
you tweeted about that. Yeah,
12 to 15-year-olds. That's fantastic. But if we're going to get 80%, we really do have to have our children vaccinated as quickly as possible. So,
just a note, Dr. Redliner is a world-renowned pediatrician. Go ahead, doctor.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you are.
Okay. I can find my train of thought again. We really do have to get our kids vaccinated, and hopefully we will. And listen, at the end of the day, the Biden administration has been unbelievably effective. Yeah. Listen, they're going to reach 200 million doses out there and administered very, very shortly. They were originally talking about 100 million doses the first 100 days. They're going to surpass that by a long shot.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
And every new study is encouraging. Pfizer also saying they know vaccine protection lasts at least 6 months after the second shot. I mean, it's just things that we didn't know for sure. But and that it's covering variants. I mean, it's all good news. But as you say, your final warning, you say we have this continuing story of recklessness from some governors who are opening too early. Vaccine resistors are extremely worrisome. COVID variants that have behaviors that are unpredictable. These all represent a major threat to us. That's what's concerning. There's still so many ifs. You know, we all are like, oh, my God, I'm going to fit. Chris and I are both going to have probably full immunity by around, you know, May 1st or so, because, you know, different schedules for Pfizer and Moderna. But, you know, it depends on all of our other fellow humans here, right? Behavior and vaccine.
It certainly does. It certainly does.
Yeah. So anyway, listen to Dr. Doom. He's world renowned, damn it. And by the way, I will be insufferable next week by the time you talk to me.
Oh, boy.
Have natural antibodies. So, all right.
Oh, boy.
This Friday appearance is a lot more exciting for some reason. But okay. That's
Woo-hoo, it's vaccine day weekend. All right. Love you, Dr. Doom. See
Take
you
care,
next
guys.
Thanks, Doc.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Doc. I forgot to ask Sean to have, Patrick Swayze, somebody from Red Dawn screaming, Wolverines! University of Michigan law professor, former prosecutor, just all-around awesome podcast star from Sisters in Law, Barb McQuaid joins us. Hey, Barb.
Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning.
Great to see you.
Go Wolverines. Let's just start with that. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So you are here to be the adult supervision of our Matt Gaetz coverage. So thank you for elevating the conversation already just by being here. Okay.
Happy to give it a try.
All right.
Yeah.
I just the headlines on media. Why is Matt Gaetz being investigated for sex trafficking? I'm going to go out on a limb without any legal training and say because he likely is guilty of sex trafficking. But I don't. Yeah. I mean, this case, is this not the weirdest case you've ever commented on? I mean, it's just all of the elements of it.
It is weird. I mean, number one, you know, sex trafficking is a very serious crime. Mm-hmm. And when it involves someone as prominent as a congressman, that makes it alone a very significant story. But then it's got this weird angle, as you've mentioned, about this allegation of extortion. And of course, we only know about the investigation into Matt Gaetz from Matt Gaetz himself. So I think there's a lot more information yet to be learned about what is going on here.
Yeah. I'm not even, I hang around with a lot of you lawyers. I'm not one, but I was like, oh my God, shut up and get a lawyer. What is he doing? Implicating Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson now is going to have to be interviewed, isn't he, by the FBI? I mean,
I think so, because he talks, you know, I don't know what he was trying to suggest there the other night, but he did seem to suggest that Tucker Carlson had met the person involved in the crime. You know, I'm sure that whoever's investigating this case knows a whole lot more than has already been revealed, and they can make a decision about that. But I think that is very much a possibility because of the things that Matt Gaetz said on air the other night about Tucker Carlson and his wife being present with the subject of this investigation and having met her. So possibly he has brought Tucker Carlson into the case in that way.
Well, Sean, give us number six. This is Andy McCabe, of course, former FBI.
know, 21 years of opening and overseeing and conducting investigations, I can tell you that nobody opens a sex trafficking investigation in which the subject is a sitting member of Congress without having a significant, you know, degree of information. In this case, it's likely that some of that information came from the prosecution of this associate of Congressman Gates, Joel Greenberg, but that's hard to tell at this point. But in any case, I can assure you the FBI doesn't open these cases lightly, and they don't get briefed to the attorney general without some significant momentum behind them.
I mean, that's why this, you know, the usual suspects, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene and whoever his, you know, people defending Matt Gaetz are calling witch hunt. How do you say that, Barb? But this is the Trump Justice Department. I mean, the Trump Justice Department generally only punished Trump, you know, enemies and helped Trump friends. So how do you even spin that, right?
Yeah, and I'll add to what Andy McCabe said there. You know, he sees it from the FBI perspective. I saw it from the DOJ perspective, which is, you know, the lawyers involved in opening a case like this. And similarly, a case like this, because it is a member of Congress, does not get opened lightly. It would require approval at the highest levels of the Justice Department. So that would get shared with the Deputy Attorney General in this instance, because of the separation of powers issue and the political implications. You know, you don't have just Joe, assistant U.S. attorney in Florida, open a case like this. This gets briefed all the way up to the highest levels so that they can put a stop to anything that might be perceived as inappropriate, politically motivated, or even perceived as such. And so I agree with Andy McCabe there that there was a great level of care and attention paid to a case like this to open it.
So, but let's talk just briefly, because we have a lot of other legal stuff, about the this, I don't even know. Doesn't it sound more like a pay for play than a extortion? It sounds like that he is already was separately being investigated for child sex trafficking. And then this wild thing about his, I'm almost certain you're not supposed to blurt out that your dad's wearing a wire, but anyway, on national TV, but I mean, something to do with, I mean, it's almost like it's a, oh, if you give us money for this thing, then we will stop the legitimate investigation into your child trafficking. It doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, can you explain that weirdness? The whole, is it the extortion claim?
I don't know that I can explain it, because the facts that we know so far don't really quite add up. But based on the facts that we know so far, there were some private actors who approached the Gates family about providing some assistance to find someone who has been, you know, gone missing in the Middle East. And it is very quite possibly true that both things are true, that Matt Gaetz is being investigated for sex trafficking and someone was seeking assistance in this other matter. But the facts are very sketchy, and it sounds like it is not legitimate authorities that were asking his father to wear a wire, but private actors who may have duped them into believing that their assistance would result in ending this investigation. Maybe they have the ability to end the investigation, but it doesn't seem likely. That's really not the way the FBI works.
It's not a current DOJ official, Barb. It's somebody that's what it wasn't even a position to extort. I mean, it seems to me like he admitted, like, I'm guilty of child sex trafficking, but this guy said he can make that go away. I mean, it's just the whole thing is extraordinary.
I think one possibility is that, you know, there has been rumor in recent days also that Matt Gaetz was considering resigning from Congress to take a job at Newsmax.
Yeah.
It may be that he knows that this information is coming out into the public domain soon about allegations of sex trafficking. And he was trying to do what, you know, people in the public domain do and get ahead of it by, you know, disclosing it on your own terms, trying to portray yourself as the victim as opposed to the perpetrator. And that seems to be what he was trying to do with Tucker Carlson, but it doesn't seem to have been executed particularly well. And this, you know, extortion story, it possibly seems to be more of a distraction than a defense. But, you know, when you are someone in the public eye like that, you know, most lawyers would give any of us who found ourselves in legal trouble to just keep your mouth shut. Don't say anything, because anything you say can be used against you and might be inconsistent with other facts that you learn about later. So just be quiet. But when you are someone in the public domain, like a member of Congress, you have to think not only about your success in a court of law, but also your portrayal in the court of public opinion. And so I think that, you know, he was trying to get ahead of this story to protect his own reputation. And sometimes it's just a matter of having alternate talking points out there so that people who are inclined to defend him have something to say.
Right. You can just do the same witch hunt, both sides do it thing. I hate Matt Gaetz. And my first thought was, oh, shut up and call Barb McQuaid. What's wrong with you? Get a good lawyer. Oh, God. Okay. Let's talk about, give me cut seven. We were just talking off the air about the Derek Chauvin trial and how really emotional and wretching this is, even for the witnesses. This was Charles McMillan yesterday, a witness.
Mr. McMillan, do you need a minute?
Oh, my God.
Just give me a moment, Mr. McMillan. I'm not sure if there's water as well. Oh. If you need a break to get some water, let me know. And we can take a break.
Wow. I mean, Barb, we were saying many of these witnesses, it just the empathy and the stark difference is the empathy and the guilt they're showing as opposed to Derek Chauvin's complete lack of remorse. Right. I mean, isn't that it's wrenching to watch, but isn't that, you know, a dichotomy that plays in favor of the prosecution?
Yeah, I think this is one of the reasons that prosecutors prefer guilty pleas to trials, because it forces witnesses to relive the trauma that they went through. And, you know, a man lost his life and these people watched it. You'll hear many of them say how they're racked with guilt because they didn't do more to help George. You heard several of the witnesses say that, and I'm sure they have relived this moment. And to have to watch the video again in this setting where all eyes are on them is got to be incredibly traumatic for all of them. And yes, I think that we haven't heard from Derek Chauvin or these other officers, and I don't know that we will, because he certainly has a right to remain silent and not to testify at trial. But the way he appeared that day with, the hand in the pocket, I think was a particularly bad look. He was expressionless other than, asking people to get back and get away. It does appear to be very cold. But, one thing I want to say, and not about Derek Chauvin, I don't know what was going through his mind, and this trial will determine that. But I have friends who are police officers. And I have seen them go through trauma. And one of the things we've done wrong in this country, I think for too long, is to expect police officers to show up at the scenes of bloody fatal accidents or murder scenes or horrific child abuse and then just go back to work the next day as if nothing happened. Yeah. We saw that with the two officers at the Capitol who committed suicide. They're humans who also go through trauma. And I think we don't do enough in this country to attend to the mental wellness of police officers. And I think that contributes sometimes to the problem we have with officers who respond with excessive force. I think it's something that we should pay more attention to going forward, to make sure officers are well enough to go back on the streets and deal with these very delicate and potentially fatal interactions with citizens.
And I got to say, Barb, I have a friend who works with veterans, and that is a thing with PTSD with veterans, too. And I think sometimes ties into this whole masculinity thing issue that we have with, and frankly, all the mass shooters that are men. But I think there is a whole larger issue there that you're really smart to bring up about just, men feeling like it looks weak for them to get help. And then the degree of sort of toxic masculinity we have tied in with whether it's policing, guns, violence, et cetera, right?
Yeah, I think that police departments need to consider, mandatory counseling after people have been involved in a situation with trauma, helping them raise awareness. I have an officer who's a friend who's an officer who's retired now, who does training on officer wellness based on his own experiences of experiencing trauma and being expected to get out there the next day and, only later realized how much baggage he was carrying around as a result of that, and trying to raise awareness and provide training to police departments about this issue.
Yeah. Speaking of which, let's turn legally to this case, the two Capitol Police officers who filed a civil suit against Trump for physical and emotional injuries they suffered as a result of the January 6th riot. They quoted Trump's words leading up to the riot, including his baseless claims of voter fraud and the assertion Democrats are trying to steal the election. The suit demands, which I thought found this surprising, Barb, an award of only $75,000 for each officer for each of the five alleged counts against Trump, which are directing assault and battery, aiding and abetting assault and battery, directing intentional infliction of emotional distress, and violating D.C. statutes by against incitement of a riot and disorderly conduct. Why the monetary number so low, do you think?
My guess is that is the jurisdictional limit in that case, the bottom, the floor, that you can't file in that particular court unless the damages equal that. So oftentimes you'll see that in a lawsuit, that somebody is just seeking whatever that bare minimum is, and then the proofs at trial will demonstrate the precise losses. So that's just a jurisdictional requirement to get themselves into court, and then that number will become more precise as time goes on. So I doubt that that's the final number that they would be seeking.
And Barb, what are the chances, do you think, legally, Trump is going to, you know, pay a consequence civilly or criminally for the January 6th insurrection?
Well, I think these civil cases are actually much stronger than the criminal case. You know, you may remember the old O.J. Simpson case where
I was just going to say we're in L.A. out here in O.J. land, and the whole civil criminal bar of evidence and such. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, when I was working in the U.S. Attorney's Office, there were certain cases that, you know, we looked at that could be brought criminally or civilly or both. And our civil attorneys would frequently remind me of, you know, the four most beautiful words in the legal system, which are preponderance of the evidence, which is a much lower standard than guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. You know, guilt beyond a reasonable doubt to take someone's liberty is a very, very high standard, and it should be. Preponderance of the evidence means just 51%. I'm a little more sure than not, you know, then. And even though the gist of the legal claim is very similar to what could be pursued if there were criminal charges, the likelihood of persuading a jury in a civil case is much stronger. And consequently, the likelihood of someone simply paying some money to resolve it and settle it also goes up. And so it could very well be that some of these civil suits are able to do what the criminal law is not in holding President Trump accountable. But, you know, we'll have to see as those cases proceed.
Finally, what criminally, which velociraptor might get Trump first? New York, Georgia? What do you think?
It seems to me that based on the tea leaves, and of course we don't know all the facts, but the things that have been pursued by Cyrus Vance in New York, who is a very serious and good lawyer, you know, as are all of these people. But he has been so dogged in pursuing these tax records and has hired some very good and experienced people to pursue this. It makes me think that there's some there.
Yeah.
You know, his case has reached a sufficient level of development that makes me believe that he thinks it's a serious case. And so, you know, the likelihood that there is some improprieties based on the things we know about Michael Cohen, who pled guilty and was convicted of fraud, the reference of President Trump as individual one in a DOJ document, as a pretty strong indicator that there's some good evidence there. So it seems to me that's the one that is most likely to come to fruition at some point.
I have indicated by a certain finger that Donald Trump has always been number one with me, Barb, but we won't get into that. I agree with all of your analysis today as a former U.S. attorney myself. Just kidding, April Fools. I'm just a comedian that tells fart jokes, but you came on my show, and that made it all the better. Go Wolverines! And listen to Sisters-in-Law, the wildly popular new podcast. Thank you, Barb.
Thanks, Stephanie.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Barb.
Thanks, Chris. Have a great day.
Okay, all right. Bye-bye.